The Horseman's Corner is an original production of Howard Hale Broadcasting, on the air since 1994 with over 7,000 episodes with people involved in the world of horses. I'm Howard's son, Brian, and we welcome you to the Horseman's Corner. Hello, I'm your host, Brian Hale, and today we have a special edition of an archived interview with Howard Hale and co-host Marty Martin with special guest Buck Brannaman. Howard Hale and Marty Martin have since passed on, but let's take a listen to this classic interview on this Horseman's Corner extended version.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program. Co-host is Marty Martin, author of a couple of outstanding books, Problem Solving 1 and Problem Solving 2, that you can get through Western Horseman. And also with us, Buck Brannaman, a clinician, horseman, and author as well. Matter of fact, Faraway Horses was a great book, one that I read quite a while ago. And Buck, we haven't talked to you since the Faraway Horses. How have things been going in the last couple of years?
Well, it's good. I was trying to remember, Howard, when I talked to you last, and I can't remember where our paths crossed last. Do you?
As a matter of fact, it's tough for me to remember what I had for breakfast, Buck. So that's one of those deals. And, of course, you and Marty go back a long ways. Why don't you go ahead and get this started with Buck, Marty?
Okay, Buck, it's an honor to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
You have been involved in a movie that is titled none other than Buck. Can you tell us a little bit about the movie?
Well, I had gotten to know Cindy Neal, the director, through the clinic. She'd ridden with me for years. And we were having lunch one day at McGinnis Meadows Ranch in Montana where I was doing a clinic. And she said, I really feel compelled to tell your story in a documentary form because I really feel like the things that happened during your clinics through working with horses and people is a story that would appeal to anyone, whether they had a horse or not. And she said, I'm no filmmaker at this point, but I feel like I want to tell this story. And sure enough, the story itself made a filmmaker out of her.
She was right about the fact that your story appeals to people, whether they're horse people or not. I have talked to, even though the people that I come across is a smaller number than you do, but I come across probably more people that are not horse people than you do, and even those people say, yes, I saw the movie and I really liked it. I thought it was...
How long did it take to put the film together?
They basically were filming for 2.5 years. So through that process, well, there was a lot of different pieces with Riata and with Mary. So they basically took 300 hours worth of film and turned it into 88 minutes. And you could have made probably 4 or 5 different documentaries out of all the material they had, but it turned out to be good.
Tell us a little bit of your story for the folks that aren't familiar with it, will you?
I started off as a trick roper as a child, my brother and I. We started that at a pretty early age. I started doing rope tricks when I was 3 years old. Turned professional, started getting paid to do it when I was 6. And we did that for a number of years. And then years later, when I was 11, my mom passed away. And it wasn't too long after that, my dad was, he had always abused us kids, but it got to where it was life-threatening. So we went into a foster home. And that's where I started to take an interest in being a cowboy. My foster dad was a cowboy. I really got interested in riding colts. And so by the time I was 13 years old, I was riding horses for the public and shoeing some horses. And my foster dad basically told me, he said, he's a funny old feller. He said, I don't know if you're ever going to amount to much, kid. He said, so you better learn how to shoe a horse and ride a colt. And then I won't have to worry about you. You're always going to be able to eat. And that was really the beginning for me. And then, of course, years later, I got around Ray Hunt and then studied under Ray for the next 30 years.
Well, by gosh, your foster dad was right. You have been able to keep eating, haven't you?
Yeah, so far it looks like it's going to work out. Although this morning I'm having a less than romantic day. Everybody thinks I'm a movie star or something now. Well, I got up this morning and drove a load of limbs and things to the dump and broke a hydraulic line. I have hydraulic fluid all over me while we're doing this interview.
Oh, golly.
I can have a less than romantic life.
Well, sometimes the life of the cowboy is not as romantic as what people would make it out to be, is it?
Well, I'd been on the road since February, and I just got home, and I thought, boy, this will be good. I'll get home and maybe head to the golf course in the afternoons, play a little golf, and enjoy the spring weather. Well, it doesn't look like that's what happened for me.
You know, Buck, you mentioned that your foster mother and dad, your foster mother was in that movie, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And I remember meeting her up at your place at that 10-day clinic.
Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm. And I can vouch for the fact that she is a very fine woman.
I think there's a lot of people maybe left that theater, and I hope so, that when they left, they thought, well, I don't care much if I end up like Buck Brannaman, but I'd sure like to end up like Betsy Shirley.
Yeah.
You spent the next 30 years studying with Ray Hunt and having some interaction with him. Talk about that a little bit, what that's meant to you, will you?
Well, basically, without Ray Hunt, I at best would have been a ranch cowboy that didn't maybe have a whole lot to offer. I devoted my entire riding life to trying to emulate what he would like me to do, and I never really strayed from Ray Hunt's teaching. I never looked elsewhere. I've stayed the course my whole life, and it turned out to be a pretty good move, which I haven't made lots of great moves in my life, but that's one of them.
Yeah, talk about your philosophy, the philosophy that you picked up from Ray, and how you work with the horses, will you?
Well, basically, in the nutshell, what you're thinking of is you're trying to work with the horse in a way that it's congruent with the nature of a horse. So you, through all of these things that I've learned and what I teach, you're trying to teach people how to understand a horse and what it takes to set up a situation where the horse can learn from you. And you encourage the horse to release. And obviously you're going to put some pressure on the horse to motivate him, but it's really all about the reward. And we don't think of it as a punishment and reward. Punishment is something that people do when they're late, when they're not engaged. And I believe that's true with kids, too. A lot of folks wait for the kid to make a mistake, and then they want to punish him, and yet if they were engaged more as a parent, they wouldn't have got that far anyway. They would have redirected him. And that's what it really is with the horses as well. You don't wait for him to get in so much trouble that you end up trying to get revenge for it, because that's often what punishment is revenge. And I don't go along with that. I think a person needs to be engaged and be planning ahead and be able to think ahead of the horse, rather than always trying to play catch-up.
Sounds interesting, sounds good, and sounds like the way you ought to work with the horse, but how tough is it for people to get that timing in and feel that they need to be rewarding that horse at the proper time?
Obviously, in the clinics, you know, people, in a crude sense, they're going to get some results pretty quick. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep coming back to my clinics for 30 years, but there's a difference between that and having what I do be a devotion, something you spend your whole life at, and you don't, I don't know that you ever figure that you arrive at one certain point in time. You're just gradually trying to get better. It's a devotion that you spend your life at, and I consider horsemanship, every bit to be one of the fine arts as what anything else would be. But you're going to be around horses and work at it and be a student for a long time before you're an artist at what you do.
Yeah, that makes sense. What else would you like to talk about with Buck, Marty?
Well, I'd like to just say that I recently attended Buck's clinic in Fort Collins. I think this was this last weekend, wasn't it? And as I was a spectator this time, I wasn't able to get up there with my horse. But every time I see him, he's that much better of a teacher. He cares about the people, and believe me, he cares about the horse. And he makes that obvious, you know.
Thanks, Marty.
I can remember back, I don't know, two or three years ago, maybe longer, that somebody was actually abusing their horse. You know, maybe they couldn't get their horse to do what they wanted, and they were kind of abusive of that horse. And I don't think Buck took too kindly to that.
Well, you know, it's for me, I have to be there for the horse. And I think for the most part, people are doing the best they can. You know,
yeah.
Very rarely would a person get up in the morning thinking, well, I wonder what I can do to wreck my horse today. But sometimes those things that people do with horses, it's out of ignorance. They don't know. And that's my job, to try to help them understand things from the horse's point of view without putting them on the defensive to where they're unwilling to even try. So that's a fine line to ride, because you're trying to encourage them to do something that will fit the horse, that will be a little more humane the way they work with the horse, and yet at the same rate, take a long look at themselves and sort of be objective about themselves and how they approach things in general. And that's a fine line to ride, and, you know, you do your best not to make anybody mad, but at the same rate, you have an obligation, first and foremost, to tell the truth.
Well, guys, let's take a break and get this program paid for, but you folks stay with us. We'll have more from Buck Brandeman in just a moment. You're listening to the Horseman's Corner. So you missed a Horseman's Corner on the radio. Well, you can find all of the Horseman's Corner programs by going to horsemanscorner.com. You can also find some links to some good horse sales there. You can get all that by going to horsemanscorner.com. Good information for the horseman, and a good place to advertise if you have a horse-related business. That's horsemanscorner.com.
Do you need help with anything website-related? Hale Multimedia has been in the business of helping others for over 20 years. Please give us a call at 940-224-6315 or visit halemultimedia.com. Anything website related, we're here to help you. That's halemultimedia.com.
Welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program, along with me co-host Marty Martin and our guest Buck Brandeman. Let's continue our conversation with Buck. Buck, when people are working with horses, do they sometimes tend to nag that horse too much?
Yeah, a lot of times I'll say, do less than what you think it's going to take to get the job done. And then within a moment or two, if you don't get the job done, do what it takes. But instead, what a lot of times they'll do is they might offer him a good deal, and then if they don't get the job done, then they nag him to death. And then they really do just what it takes to be annoying, but not enough to be effective with the horse. Well, we all know what that turns into. You end up with a crabby, disrespectful horse. And something that I always tell people is, you need to bear in mind, horses are real keen on this, in that they're paying close attention whether or not you can move their feet or whether they can move yours. And if they get a notion that they can cause you to move your feet and yield to them, you're already heading down the wrong road.
Boy, isn't that the truth.
And I don't think sometimes people understand just how little it takes for that horse to read that body language. They really perceive the body language, don't they?
Well, Ray used to say a horse can feel a fly land on his butt in a windstorm. So if they're sensitive enough to feel that, there's no reason why it ought to take a lot for the human being to get their point across to the horse.
You wind up with some, do you do much work with horses that are spoiled horses or problem horses, or are a lot of the horses that come to your clinics, are they problem horses?
Every week of the year, man.
You'll be giving some more clinics here in Colorado on the Front Range. And what are those locations?
Well, I'm going to be in Longmont at the Boulder County Fairgrounds, and then I'll be in Kiowa. I'll be in outside of Steamboat Springs in Hayden. And I'll be in Eagle yet this summer. About anybody can find the information about those off my website, Brandeman.com. Most of the clinics these days are booked full for riders, but there's always room for spectators, and sometimes that's good for people to go and check it out and watch it first and then ride. But it's gotten to where it's pretty hard to get into a clinic now with a horse. Howard, I talked to you quite a few years ago, of course. I've known you for a while and kind of followed your career as well. And I was laughing with a friend of mine the other day. You know, it's almost like you spend 30 years to be an overnight success. You know, I've done over 1,800 clinics over the last 30 years. And it's funny, Marty and I were talking about the Western Horseman, which is, you know, an iconic magazine, of course. Everybody knows about it. Well, in the last 30 years, I've done, like I say, 1,800 clinics. I have more experience riding with the great Ray Hunt than any person alive. I've gotten a Ph.D. in equine science. I've been in 2 feature films. To this day, I've never been on the cover of Western Horseman. Can you believe that?
You know what that is? That is interesting. But one of these days, you'll get good enough and famous enough where maybe that'll happen.
I'm not so sure I'd do it now. It's more of a bad Howard that I don't do it now.
You started something called the Legacy of Legends. Is that correct, Buck?
Yeah, the Legacy of Legends is an event that me and Carolyn Hunt put together that we do every year, and it's an exhibition of people who were actually students of Ray Hunt and Tom Dorrance, because as we know these days, since Ray and Tom have passed, there are a lot of people sort of hang their hat on Ray Hunt and Tom Dorrance, and some of them haven't even met them.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do an event once a year that gave people an opportunity to see actual students of Ray Hunt and Tom Dorrance do what they do. And we have all disciplines of riding, all different disciplines, everything from jumping to dressage to working cow horse to cutting to riata roping, colt starting. And through this event, it helps us to raise money to offer scholarships for the next generation of horsemen coming up to be able to get off to a good start and have a real positive influence in the spirit of the way Ray Hunt and Tom Dorrance hope that people would work with horses. So we're trying to do a good thing, and we're trying to keep Ray and Tom's memory alive through doing this. And we do it the first weekend in February. It'll be again the first week in February next year at the South Point Casino in Las Vegas.
Well, Buck, that sounds like really an interesting program and something that's worthwhile. Let me ask you just one more question, and then we'll close this out so you can get your hydraulic line fixed and the oil off from you. But what's your advice for folks to, we talked about problem horses. You say you get them virtually every clinic. In reality, you have problem horsemen rather than problem horses. What steps do they need to take to get from that problem horse owner to one who's really doing a good job for the horse? What's the first step that they need to take?
Every week of the year, I tell people, listen, I don't care if you've ridden your horse, you're not getting along, you're afraid, you're in trouble, he's disrespectful, whatever it might be, you need to go back to the beginning. You need to get that horse to where what you do with that horse on the end of a lead rope is like a beautiful dance, where you own those feet, where you can take those feet anywhere you want on the end of a lead rope. And that gives you not only some respect from the horse, but it also gives you confidence that you do have some control of the feet, so that when you get on, you're not so uptight that you have nothing to offer the horse.
What steps do they need to take to learn to do that?
They need to get around someone who's had some experience at this kind of stuff. It's no different than anything else. If I was going to learn how to play a guitar, well, it wouldn't do me any good to just go buy a guitar and start banging away on it. I'd need somebody to sort of line me out and show me the basics and the fundamentals. And because horsemanship is no different than any other art form. Let's say you were going to learn how to paint portraits. Well, you'd probably go take a class, and you'd learn fundamentals and basics and mechanics, and you'd probably be at that a while before anybody accused you of being an artist, for sure. And it's the same thing with the horse. You do learn fundamentals and basic movements from a teacher, hopefully, if you're smart, and then basically then it turns into something that that becomes refined, it becomes something beautiful for people to see. And in the beginning, it might not be too beautiful. It might look like a snake-killing contest in the beginning, but everybody starts at the same place. But unless you go get some help from someone that has a certain degree of education, you could spend your whole life floundering around and never amount to much.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How do people get what's available on your website? Are there books, DVDs, that sort of thing available? What's there?
Well, there's a set of DVDs that basically take you from groundwork all the way to a finished bridle horse. And trailer loading DVD, and my books are on there as well, Faraway Horses and Believe. So there's quite a bit of information on there, and there's a book I wrote years ago called Groundwork that has been quite a good resource for people to be able to remember all of this groundwork once they've been to a clinic.
And does it make...
That book is excellent.
Does it make sense, Buck, for folks then to maybe do something like get the DVDs and get some background and then go to a clinic?
Well, I think it'd be a good start. They'd at least be somewhat familiar with what I'm doing. And sometimes it happens in reverse. Sometimes they go to the clinic and then they get a DVD so that they can take it home and remember. It kind of works both ways. But for me, I had quite a bit of experience when I met Ray Hunt, and I actually thought I kind of had some stuff going on. But until you get around someone with experience like what Ray Hunt had, you can be fooling yourself into thinking you're something other than what you are. And it didn't take him but about 5 minutes to humble me up when I met him. And thank goodness I was blessed to be able to have met him and got around him when I was 16 years old. It wasn't too far gone.
Well, Buck, thanks a lot for being with us on today's program. It's time to close it out. Always a lot of fun to talk to you. And, of course, I'd like to thank you. And, of course, I'd like to thank Marty Martin, co-host of the program. And he always does a great job. He has a couple of good books out that you'll need to get, Problem Solving 1 and Problem Solving 2. An interesting life that Buck Brannaman has had and the way he's put everything together. Well, it's time to close out today's edition of the program. I'm Howard Hale, host of the show, and gosh, it's good to have you folks along with us. You're the ones that really make it possible, and I really appreciate you tuning in week in and week out and listening to the show. So since it is time to close it out, I'll say goodbye. May God bless. See you next week. Same time, same place.
We sincerely appreciate the voice of the late Howard Hale. God bless you, Dad. And now that's going to complete this edition of this special archived version of Extended Horseman's Corner, right here on the Digging Deeper Podcast Network.